on this episode of Still Loading.
Cook up the catnip, Mom. I'll be home for supper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today it is more Captain N, my friend. More Captain N and my co-host with the Mo-host, who's been with me for this entire Captain N journey, Dexter Morrill. Dexter, how are you doing, my friend?
It's me. I'm back, and I'm doing great because it's Captain N. And Captain N always gets me energized. And yes, I meant to do that. Call back to our obnoxious N puns from earlier.
I totally forgot. It was funny when I was reading off when I was doing the little intro there, I was like, I don't have any N puns for this one. And then you figured out a way to do it anyway.
I'll always be there to pick up the slack.
Pick up the pieces. We are here to talk Captain and the Game Master. This month's episode is Season 2, Episode 7, Once Upon a Time Machine. And it originally came out on October 20th, 1990. It was written by Matt Uitz. It's hard to really read. Matt Uitz and Michael Maurer. Michael Maurer has written, actually, I think my favorite episode in the season so far, which was The Trouble with Tetris. That's his only other writing credit on the season so far. He appears next episode. Which we'll get to. And Matt Uitz appears in the episode in two episodes or like 3 or 4 months from now again. Michael Maurer is in a lot of stuff, actually. He wrote a lot of stuff in this season. So we are here to discuss episode Once Upon a Time Machine. This episode features random characters that I've never seen before. I know they're from a game. They're from the game elements in this are Zelda 2 Link's Adventure, The Adventures of Link, excuse me, and Puss in Boots, Peru's Great Adventure.
Yes, so I'm assuming, I love this game as a kid. So I'm going to...
Do the villains in this game, in the show, come from the game?
Absolutely. I did not know that at first, though. They name drop in this, like, they're as popular as Ganon or Bowser. Like, Dr. Gary. And I was like, what is happening right now? And it wasn't until Pero shows up that I was like, oh, snap, is this Puss in Boots? Like, I got all stoked.
Well, I won't lie, actually, the character of Pero in this is the best part of the episode. I think actually the voice acting for him is really strong compared to the rest. No offense to the other voice actors, you know, shout out Gary Chalk. Love you. Shout out Vitas Terzo. Mm-hmm. You're awesome. But, and all the others actually, to be fair, they're all pretty great. But for some reason, it just, for me, it felt like Pero's voice just fit better than the others. I don't know. Did you get that vibe too?
Yeah, similar. It's kind of funny because they already have, you know, Zelda and Link in this. It also felt like a crossover, like there was already a Puss in Boots show, which, I mean, we can kind of get into that a little bit because it kind of is a crossover, but I don't think that they already had a voice for Pero before he appeared in Captain N.
Interesting. So there was a Puss in Boots cartoon, like Pero Puss in Boots or whatever. I'm very confused by the name of this. Why is Pero the name of Puss in Boots?
Yes. It's kind of confusing, but I did a little bit of research before the episode, which I did know this. If you're an animation buff and you watch anything from Toei Animation, Pero is their Mickey Mouse. Pero's their icon, their mascot. Because I can't remember if it's their first or just their most popular, like when they first started out Toei Animation. I did not know that as a kid when I had the Puss in Boots game. And then just like watching anime and just different Toei Animation stuff, I was like, hey, that's Puss in Boots. That's weird. I love that game. Like, I had no idea that there was any kind of like crossover with that. It took me being older and like looking into it to figure that out. But yeah, so the game that this is referencing is based on, I think it's a sequel to, or sequel or prequel or something, or retelling of the animated film from like 1969. That's like a really old toy animation.
That's what the game is.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. From what I saw, this was the game that they used, you know, Puss in Boots: Peril's Great Adventure is a sequel a sequel to a Japan only game that was called The Wonderful World of Puss in Boots, and it was released in 1986, and this came out in 1990. But this one came out in North America, and the other one did not. The original one did not. I do find it interesting the character of Puss in Boots was created by a guy named Charles Perrault. I think Perrault is how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
But which makes sense because Perrault is the character's name. So I'm just kind of confused by the character of Puss in Boots, I guess, because is that like, I always thought the character was named Puss in Boots. Like it didn't have a name. It was just Puss in Boots. So when I saw it in this and it was Perrault Puss in Boots, I'm like, is that two different people or the same person? I think in this world, Puss in Boots is like Perrault is Puss in Boots. Like Puss in Boots would be the name of like an adventure series, and Perrault is the main character of that adventure series.
But it's all from literally a cat wearing boots. Like, I think that's where I think it's just what he is, or like a last name kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Excuse me. Listeners, if I yawn a lot, by the way, I've had a hell of a weekend so far. I got the flu shot yesterday, and last night I was sweating bullets. It was like the worst fever I've experienced in quite some time. It's been a rough 24 hours. So I'm a little loopy right now. So if you hear me yawning or just being a little more discombobulated, it's a combination of the weekend we're recording this is a long recording weekend. And on top of that, suddenly randomly getting hit with the side effects of the flu vaccine. Yay. It's been a weekend. But okay. I understand a little bit more now about the character. I think that clarified a little bit for me. So the episode begins with Captain N and Princess Lana having a picnic with Link and Zelda. And of course, Duke is there as well. And they're trying to have a picnic on Hyrule when suddenly their picnic is interrupted by, what were these things called? Buzz bogs? They're like little flies with rocks. I couldn't understand what he called them.
The first time I watched it through, I thought he just said bugs. Like, oh no, bugs. The second time it sounded like he said bagus.
Something like that. You know what? I do have closed captioning on right now. So let's see if it'll tell us. The closed caption in this are his machine generated though. So it's your guess is as good as mine. I don't know if this is correct or not, but the closed caption for this says that they're just called boons. B-O-O-N-S. Boons. I don't think that's an enemy in Zelda, if I remember.
It's got to be. I'll have to look that up. Yeah. Maybe I got mixed up with Bagu because that's a character from Zelda 2. The whole I am error and then Bagu thing.
But these are flies. That's the whole thing. Like they're flies with rocks. That's what they call them. They call them boons. I don't understand. Anyway, flies with rocks.
It is part of the Zelda wiki. Boon.
Oh. Oh, it is.
They appear as giant flies. Yeah, giant flies.
Huh. Well, they're
from Zelda 2, so that makes sense.
All right, that makes a lot of sense then. So they drop rocks on their picnic and ruin it. They try to steal their picnic basket for reasons. Their picnic basket for reasons. Hey, boom, boom. Thank you for getting the Yogi Bear.
Hey, boom, boom. Yes, you're welcome.
Oh, we have problems. And Captain N decides, like, well, I can do this without my power pad for reasons. So he throws his power pad and zapper away and tries to fight the boons on his own. And he kind of does, kind of doesn't. And it's a little bit all over the place. And while all of this is happening, this random villain pops up out of nowhere. It's such a weird way to bring the character into the world, like how to bring, you know, Puss in Boots' characters and like the game world into their world. His Power Pad and Zapper are stolen by the villains of Puss in Boots, Perro's Great Adventure. Count Grumman, right? Grumman, yes. Is that what it is?
Count and Grumman, he has like and Dr. Gary.
Dr. Gary. Both, so we're recording two episodes in a row here, and both, all the characters' names in these two episodes are just wild to me. There's so many strange names that show up.
Not a surprise in 1990, but I'm pretty sure these are like translation issues, because when I was looking at it, that the pig character is supposed to be Gourmand, which would make much more sense as like a big, you know, chubby pig that likes to eat. And Gary, I'm not sure about that one, what that's supposed to be. If that was supposed to be a different pronunciation, like how we all called Ryu as a kid, you know, like.
I wonder if Gary Gary is supposed to be like an onomatopoeia that didn't get translated well, because that stuff happens a lot. Like, you know, Japanese, as we've discussed numerous times, both when I had Jeremy Blaustein on, learning a lot about how translation and localization are tough jobs that they don't get enough credit for. But in any case, Captain N loses his power pad and his zapper to Count Grumman and Dr. Gary. I feel like there's a song, Gary. Da, 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 da,
so
da,
nice. Da. They named him twice. Yeah.
So nice. They named it twice. They take it, and this episode is just weird because it involves the N team jumping through tons and tons of portals, all in nonsensical interventions and intervals. That's the word I'm looking for. Once again, I apologize, listeners. I am running on like 4 hours of sleep and I had to wake up early. But at different intervals. And it just was very strange. Like, there was no rhyme or reason to these warp zones. Did you was it a little disorienting for you?
Oh, absolutely. We'll get into it for the next month's episode. But oh boy, I thought I was on drugs for a minute. excuse me. Actually, in my notes, right after I put down, how did the bad guys know that Kevin would leave his zapper like to be picked up? That was confusing. Like, wait, were they waiting for him to drop his belt? Like, I was trying to figure that out.
It was a crime of opportunity. You know, they saw the chance and they went for it, and that's pretty much all there really was to it.
And my note immediately following that was, I think this is already the best episode.
Why? What made you think that already? Just because you love Puss in Boots so much?
I loved the Puss in Boots game as a kid. I love Zelda, of course, still, but I did as a kid as well. And also, it starts right away with action. Like, they feign at this, like, oh, picnic, but that lasts like a fraction of a second. And then it's like, bugs, zap, zap, jump, kick, pew, pew. New bad guys, like, it just is wild right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And the animation, you know, Link and Zelda are here, so we know that the A team for animation is on this one. So it's,
are you sure about that? There's a lot of times in this, I guess I'm thinking of the next episode. The next episode has some rough moments, to say the least.
Captain N, it felt like a step up.
okay. So they follow the pig man, Dr. I always forget. I forget his name.
Grumman.
They follow Grumman through a warp zone, which just looks like a crater that just is in the middle of the forest for reasons I don't quite understand. They go through the crater and they end up in the Old West. Now, Dexter, you played this game as a kid. Was there time travel in the game?
You know, I didn't know that until I researched before this episode. I thought that he just went to different levels. But yes, the story of the game is he is time hopping. And the first level is the Old West. I just thought it was like different themed levels when I played the game. But yeah, apparently the story is time traveling.
Now, why does Perro time travel? It's like they kind of hint at it in the episode where he's being tracked by Grumman because Perro was nice to some mice and did something nice for a mouse. And obviously Grumman's a pig, but he has a bunch of cat henchmen. I guess that's a big no-no in his world. And they don't like him. It's never really explained in the episode.
Yeah, so from what my research gathered, and this is like part of the plot of the original film too, is that he shows kindness towards mice, which is not, I think he was supposed to be a guard for the mice, you know, against the mice. And so the mice got away with whatever it was because he was nice to them. So not only did he have Grumman in his kingdom, excuse me. So not only did he have Grumman in his kingdom coming after him, apparently his own like kind of cats were also out to get him because he broke the, you know, the cat code of being nice to mice.
Yeah.
So they kind of tie them together in this, but I think it's actually separate. I think that, you know, Grumman is upset. But also the cats are also like, yeah, we're going to get him too. Cause he's also, you know, not doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But that's true of the games too. Like you've got these other like cats and things like that, that are dressed up in the times, which is why I just thought it was, I didn't realize it was time travel. I just assumed it was just themed levels. The cats always fit in with whatever level they're in and they're, you know, shooting at you or chasing you.
Yeah. Okay, that makes a lot more sense then. So Perro, they get to the Old West. They're trying to track down Grumman and like the and Gary and try to get Kevin Zapper back and his power pad. They meet Perro. They see Perro's getting like harassed by Grumman's goons, which are just these really ugly looking cats. Like one dude's face is all scrunched up and it makes me really uncomfortable to look at. The other dude just has one eye. Like it's not like he's like one eye and a monocle. Like it's one normal eye and then a black dot where his other eye is. It's very strange. I don't quite understand what they're going for. Does it mean that he's missing an eye? Like I'm assuming so, but then why just include like a white dot there? Why not just or a black dot there? I don't know. The design of him is very interesting, and they decide to interfere with Perro getting captured by Grumman's goons, and they escape and they make a break for it. Now there is like a bar fight in the, like an old Western bar fight in the saloon here. This is where it all kind of goes down. And I'm not going to lie. I kind of like the visuals of this place, like all the weird animals that you see. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say the first thing I noticed was once again, Captain N did it first. One of the patrons that they get involved with is a big bull. And it just reminded me of the Cowboys of Moo Mesa, if anyone remembers that cartoon.
I never saw it, but I know about Cowboys of Moo Mesa.
And then the other thing that I thought was, if anyone knows like the funny Hanna-Barbera tropes of like whenever characters are walking, especially in the Flintstones, they would just be walking and you would see like the same like house plant and window constantly as they're walking. Yeah. There's a moment like that in this where Kevin is swinging through the saloon. And I was like, how big is this saloon?
I didn't even think about that. Oh, this is one of the first instances of it, but it happens constantly throughout the episode of Kevin just not constantly forgetting how much he relies on his power pad to do pretty much everything. He has no way to really attack enemies because he, you know, it starts off with like a gun duel type of thing. He's like, oh yeah, I don't have my power pad or I don't have my zapper. So it gets kind of annoying. I'm like, how do you keep forgetting this? That's the whole reason you're on this planet, like this mission. Like, I understand forgetting it in this moment right here, but it happens throughout the rest of the episode. And it's just very frustrating to me just to watch him constantly complain about it. I'm like, you know why it's not there. You know, you don't have it.
I wonder if they were people constantly asking the writer, why doesn't he just use a zapper? He doesn't have it. You know, like, the only time that I could think of that this show reminds you of why people are doing what they're doing. Because most of the time we're like, wait, what's happening? This is the first time where it's like the complete opposite. Like, okay, we get it.
They go too far the other direction. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they escape from the bar, though, in like this wagon, this hay filled wagon drawn by pulled by a horse. I think I forget. I don't remember what the animal was. Not that it matters all that much. But they are running, they're escaping across the desert, and Grumman and Gary, it's pulled by a cow. Sorry, I pulled it up now. It's a carriage pulled by a cow, which isn't like unheard of, but it is kind of funny seeing a cow. The cow's wearing a hat too.
Yes, of course he is.
And it's a blue cow, or maybe it's supposed to be a horse, but no, it's a horse. My apologies. It is a horse, but it has the face of a cow. The guys who are supposed to capture Perro fail, obviously. And so now they're being punished by Grumman, and they're being hung upside down by his flying time machine, whatever. But they're trying to kill Captain N, or like get Captain N and Perro. They're dropping bombs on literal bombs that look like nuclear. They look like nukes, like they're huge bombs. And they're escaping from all the blasts and everything, and they end up going through another warp zone, if I remember correctly. And this takes them to a new location, which is a pirate ship. Because reason. Well, you know what? They talk about it. They don't really say it explicitly in the episode, but we mentioned before it is time travel. Like each of these portals are going through different time, like changing it through different time periods, because the reason I say they don't say it explicitly, they don't flat out say like, oh, we're traveling through time, but they do heavily hint at, not even hint at, they do let the audience know by Grumman and Gary literally saying, oh, we're tracking them through our time machine, let's go to this time now. And then they travel back, and when they land on this pirate ship, it's run by Long John Slither, who is a snake pirate captain. I feel like this is my favorite part of the episode. Like, I just find the goofiness of a snake pirate captain with cats as like crewmen, and it's just all these different types of crewmen, and it's a very strange character because he doesn't necessarily want to, like, he wants treasure, but he doesn't kill Captain N, Link, and Perro, which seems like antithetical to every pirate. You know, like, why wouldn't they just try to be, just take what they want type of thing? But both of them, but all of them are just like, all right, we're going to use this guy's treasure map. And they're just part of the crew now, until Grumman's bad guys, you know, infiltrate it and then set it up to make it seem like Link and Captain N and whatnot were trying to, hurt Long John Slither, and by they do it by throwing a bar of soap under him, and it just kind of slides it across. He's like, "Who did that to me?" And that's about it. I mean, that's pretty. I don't know. The pirate ship is really fun for me, but there's so many random set pieces in this episode. I guess the last thing to say before I kind of turn it over to you to talk about this scene a bit is the treasure map that they're referencing beforehand, you know, that they were talking about as a reason for going on this quest. It's just a bunch of random lines and dots. This seems to be a trend with Captain N, where the treasure maps are just basic, borderline useless.
Yes, visually. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I put that in my notes, like, what is this time map? Because that's what it's supposed to be. Is it? That's how Perro knows how to get around through time, is he knows where all the warps are with this time map. But yeah, it looks like spaghetti. Like, when you actually look at the map, it's just a bunch of crisscrossing lines. I also made note when Perro was talking to Kevin and explaining to him his situation about time traveling.
How did you get that in?
He made a comment about, oh, so you guys can help me, before Grumman, and he makes a gesture of his hand across his throat, like, before he kills me.
Yeah.
And it plays the little Mario death sound effect, that like when Mario, and I really liked that touch of them doing that when instead of actually saying, you know, like dying. And then I also put that I loved Long John Slither's design. Kind of reminds me like he might be an ancestor to Trouser from Ukulele.
I could see that. I could see that.
He's got a hook on the end of his tail, which I thought was really funny too.
It's a cool design overall. Like I'm with you. I think the design of Long John Slither, plus it's a decent enough pun. You know, if you're grading on a scale of like A F to A, if we're going with like school grades, it's a solid like B.
Yes. No, it was pretty good. And I do think that I feel like that was common in flipping through my old manual, which I should have done that before we started recording, get my old NES manual out. But I think he might have been in the game, if I remember correctly. And that might have been his name in that. Maurer did his homework, the writer for this, because even like the ship that Grumman and Gary fly in is a boss during one of the shooter levels. And also, I put sick guitar solo during Shipwreck. I put that in my notes too.
The music in this episode of the one we're going to be recording next has some of the most interesting choices I've ever listened to, because we basically, I'm going to have to try to find it real quick, like where exactly it shows up, because we're getting close to the one spot for it. It's going to drive me nuts that I can't remember what it is. Okay, I found the spot. So they, you know, after the pirate ship thing happens, though, their ship does get blown up by Grumman and Gary, and then conveniently a lifeboat, still perfectly intact, they just land on top of it, and then they sail that to Skull Island, which is where I think the treasure was supposed to be, and they end up going through another warp zone, which takes them to, I think it's supposed to be New York City, if I remember correctly. Something like that. It's supposed to be something like that. Yes. Oh, no, sorry. It's London first, London. New York City later on.
Yeah.
Takes them to London, which gets us to, they actually land inside like the Big Ben equivalent in this fake London place. But they end up, you know, they're trying to find a way to another warp zone. And it's funny because Perro says, this actually kind of posits it like this place is in the real world, because Perro says, oh, the nearest warp zone's at the White Cliffs of Dover. And Captain N is like, what? That's insane. That'd be so far away, even in this world. And so makes a little Sherlock Holmes pun, is like, oh, it might be miles from here. How are we going to get there? It must be so many miles from here. And he goes, elementary, my dear Link. We fly. And then this is where we see our eponymous thumbnail for this episode. This is where we see the designs for it, where you see two of Grumman's Grumman henchmen that you constantly see throughout the episode dressed up as fake duck security or like soldiers at like Buckingham Palace, like in the British, you know, the red uniform and the tall hat thing.
Yes, the King's Guard. Yeah,
the King's Guard, that's what it is. And what a amazing design. It is so enjoyably silly. I love it.
Yeah, they're so clear. Like when you first see them, they just look really derpy. Like I was trying to figure out what was happening there, and then obviously they reveal their costumes, because it happens so quickly, and I was like, I put that in my notes, what's up with these duck guards? And then when we see them closer up, you could see their eyeballs inside the beaks of the cat killers inside.
And it's funny because they do such a good job, like where they draw the fake eyeballs of the duck guards. They're just dead on the inside. It makes sense because they're supposed to be like googly eyes, but like they're just so uncomfortable. It's very Uncanny Valley-ish, like looking at their eyes. It's kind of amusing. They tell them where the nearest airport is, and you find out it's Grumman's henchmen again, and they're telling Grumman where they're at. So this episode so far is pretty much just the N team going from warp zone to warp zone to warp zone, all trying to, this is the issue I have with the plot of the episode. They're following Perro, and Perro's like, you know, eventually we're going to run into Grumman, but I'm like, but Grumman's chasing you. Like, why? if you're trying to get your power pad back, just go fight him. Like, he's there with you all the time. Like, you don't have to keep going to different places.
Right.
And it's not until they think that they've won, that Grumman thinks that he's won, that they're able to get the upper hand on him. But so they call Grumman, and this is where they, you know, the end team gets a plane, and they're going to go fly to the White Cliffs of Dover. And this is where one of my favorite montages comes in, because it's a plane fight between, like, you know, Link and Perro in this biplane versus this time machine thing and this, like, crazy goofy combat scene. And it's got the biggest Danger Zone ripoff as a song that I've ever heard.
Except it's called Dangerous Place.
Yeah, Dangerous. I'm playing it right now. We're in a dangerous place.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's a dangerous place. Yeah. That's just all the choruses. It's a dangerous place. Like, it's, if you want something more anticlimactic, you're not going to find it most other places. That is, like, one of the most anticlimactic songs I've ever heard in my life.
So good. I love it. Yeah, and that's why, like, the flying machine, also when they were underwater, there was like a giant robot frog for like a split second. Those designs are so specific because they're from the game. Like, so much of this is taken from the game. But maybe I've got rose-colored glasses, but I loved playing through Puss in Boots, and it was like the perfect amount of difficulty. I remember getting to the final boss all the time, but I also remember, like, it was one of those games where the more you play it, like, I can get a little bit farther. It was just like a really good difficulty curve for that era of games.
And that's hard to find back on the NES era, because the difficulty curves were all over the place on NES games. You know, like, there was very little consistency with it,
except for the very end, which was Grumman and Gary, they just, like, it's hard to describe. I guess another comparison is Mickey Mouse Capades. Did you ever play that one?
I might have in passing, but not well enough to remember anything specific.
I guess the easiest comparison is Bowser from the original Super Mario, where he's hurling all the hammers at you, and he just kind of has like a weird pattern where he's like jumping and moving back and forth.
Yeah.
That's kind of what Grumman and Gary are doing, except it's just like insane bullet hell. They're just throwing and shooting all these bullets at you. And, you know, you only get a couple of hits, but they're huge, like, bullet sponges. And maybe I was just a terrible, you know, 7-year-old playing this game, but I would do really well up until I got to that final boss, and they would just crush me every time.
Well, that's the NES era for you. Like, no consistency in terms of, like, you know, the gradual raising of difficulty and all that other stuff. So the end team, they make it to the Cliffs of Dover, even though they've been shot by a heat seeking missile, and they go through the portal and they end up in New York City, and they jump out of the, even though the plane doesn't crash, the bad guys think they've won, which is very strange. Like, they are like, oh, we shot them. We didn't see the plane go down, but we know that they're gone. And their headquarters, which I actually love this, and I love the location and the visual look of it, they are in the top of the Statue of Liberty, which is a cat in this world, but still, it's essentially meant to be the Statue of Liberty. And the boss's headquarters is in the top of that. That's kind of cool to me. I don't know. What do you think, though? I love that idea.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love the Statue of Liberty.
Is that what it's? No, is that what it's actually called?
It should be.
It should.
Before they get to the statue, Kevin tries to attack their aircraft and is like hanging on to the leg of it.
Yes, he is.
And ends up falling off And I think I feel like that's the commercial break, like cliffhanger, like he's falling off of that ship. And when they cut back, Pero is able to catch him in the biplane. But if you understand, you know, listeners, bear with me here. A biplane has those wings that come off of the top of the plane.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how they were able to fly underneath Kevin and catch him when those wings are above the seats.
I thought the wings aren't above all the seats.
Okay, maybe it wasn't over the back part of the plane where his back seat is. But I remember being like, wait, how did they catch him? Because I was like, how are they going to save him? They're in a biplane. But then...
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at it now. There is a seat in the front that's covered by the wings. There's a seat in the back that does not have the wings covering it. But it is a very tight... It's an extremely tight fit regardless. Because those... Yeah, it's like... There's like maybe like a quarter inch between the wingspan and then the back seat. Like there's not that much space in between there at all.
Okay, so I'm not entirely crazy.
No, I mean it's still like they definitely had something that would have worked, but it still would have been obviously really difficult in real life. This is a cartoon. I'm kind of willing to suspend my disbelief for a cartoon.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And I'm actually watching the scene now. Kevin grabs on. And honestly, the thing he grabs onto kind of looks like a nutsack. It kind of does. Looks like this yellow nutsack. He's just yanking on this.
The way that they drew it. I think it's supposed to be like a landing gear, but.
Yeah, but it just looks like this oval, like egg, this yellow egg that he's just gripping onto, but it's still kind of in the shape of a nutsack. Yes. No, I'm actually watching the scene again of Kevin landing in the aircraft. There is some continuity errors. So the back area is still open, but the way he lands, the direction he's facing is backwards, right?
Right.
But he sees there's like this like little half circle that I understand in a plane it's meant to increase the aerodynamics of it. But when it cuts to the net, there's like this little half circle on the back half of like where his seat is. Like, so if he was facing if he was facing forwards, then, you know, it was meant to like kind of match the shape of his head a little bit, you know, go a little bit round. I'm having a hard time explaining this. I'm like, once again, listeners, I'm very tired right now. But they showed in the one scene. And then the next time it goes around, it's not on the, like that weird half circle. It's not on the back of it. It's on the front, like in between the two seats. I'm like, can't you make up your mind? Like there's a little continuity error from what I could tell, unless it's just the angle, you know, maybe they didn't need to animate it the way that it was. I don't know. I'm very confused by the whole thing. I don't know if any of that made sense.
I think so.
But the episode, we're getting close to the end of the episode. And one thing I will say before they crash the plane into the Statue of Liberty, they fly through a building in like the Empire State Building or something like that. And there's a bunch of like bunnies working inside of it. I thought that was kind of amusing to see as well.
Yeah, there's a bunny. I think there was an elephant.
Elephant in the room?
Yeah. All right, everyone, today's business. We're going to talk about the elephant in the room. What's wrong, guys? You know what you did. You know what you did, Harry.
Honestly, that's a pretty decent joke. That would be pretty great. But they crashed into the Statue of Liberty. They want to, you know, Kevin gets his Captain N power pack and Zapper back. And then a fight kind of begins. Gary summons a serpent monster, which Kevin doesn't have his... Actually, I'm sorry. He doesn't have his power pad yet, but he's trying to fight the serpent monster. Link's stuff isn't effective against the serpent monster. And Pero basically flies off with the time ship, like in kind of a weird way, too. Like all the bad guys are outside of the time ship and they're like, oh, you're going to lose here, blah, blah, blah. And they just stand there and watch Pero walk into their airship and fly away. And they're like, hey, how did he do that? I'm like, you just watched him do it. You didn't even try to stop him.
There was a weird heel turn here, or what I thought was going to be a heel turn by Pero, because he he's tied a rope to the torch, because that's actually where the warp zone is at the Catchu of Liberty's torch. So he's going to like tightrope walk over to it. But of course they know that's where he's headed. So Dr. Gary Gary shoots the warp, which I guess you can do, and blows it up. So
yeah.
At that point, Para goes, okay, fine. If you've gotten rid of my warp, I'm just going to steal your flying time machine. And he gets in it and flies away, totally abandoning Kevin and Link. Like, and I was like, wait. He's like, sorry guys, peace out. Woo. And he starts to fly away. And I was like, I can't believe this is happening. And then he's like, oh, by the way, here's your zapper back. And he throws him the zapper from the
Kevin even says, like, he yells at him. He's like, you double crossing cat or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, sorry, Captain N, gotta, do the thing or whatever he's trying. It's never really fully explained what his objective is. He's just going to warp zones for reasons. Do you know what his actual objective is? I never understood it.
I prefer yours. Sorry, gotta do the thing. that should have been what he said.
Right.
I actually don't think that I remember exactly what his purpose is, other than to get back to his regular time.
I think that's what it is. I think they do reference that now that I'm
because
like
that was what his punishment initially was for not stopping the mice, was sending him back in time, and he's trying to get back to the future. But yeah, he does end up giving Kevin back his zapper belt. And then he also tells them the weakness of the serpent. Shoot him in a weak spot behind his head.
It's like yellow. He says it's in the shape of something. I think he even says like it's in the, hold on.
I think he says it's a yellow diamond or yellow octagon or something.
Yeah.
Like
he says it's a yellow diamond. And then I'm like, for a yellow diamond. He calls it a yellow diamond. And then I look on the back, the spot where Kevin shoots, and it's a circle.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about, yellow diamond? You could maybe go with octagon, but he clearly says diamond.
Yeah.
That's what's so strange about it. But so Para flies away in the time machine, finally, well, not defeating, but thwarting at the moment, Grumman and Gary Gary. And the end team is left with, it's just Link and actually something we haven't really talked about. It's only Link and Captain N that go through the portal at the beginning of the episode. Like the picnic with the four of them and Duke, like Duke doesn't even go along from what I remember.
Yeah.
It's just them.
Yeah. So this doesn't have, the rest of the end team. This doesn't have Mother Brain or King Hippo although Game Boy does show up at the end when they do show up at the end, except for Simon to find Link and Captain N.
No, Simon does show up at the end. Because he's like tracking like footprints, trying to get their trail. And it turns out it's like the Moblin. Footprints to a Moblin. Yeah. And I love the design of the Moblin in this, the animation for it. I thought that was really fun.
Yes.
And
that when Game Boy's tracking them, he just sucks the footprints into his screen
right off the ground.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, kind of awesome to see. I actually like the ending of it, because the whole purpose is that Kevin wants to feel like Kevin wants to feel like he's not totally reliant on his power pad and zapper. So when they do finally get back, Link and Kevin, Princess Lana and Zelda are rounding the troops, are trying to get people to be willing to help find Captain N and Link. And they finally come back, and that's when, Simon finds the Moblin, because he's an idiot and doesn't realize what tracks he's tracking. And Captain N defeats the Moblin by having a random fruit that I don't know exactly where he got it from, but he charges the Moblin. The Moblin charges him. He dodges, and then he just slams it over the back of the Moblin's head, and that's it. That's like how he wins the fight. And Simon makes a snarky comment. He's like, so nice of you to join us, but next time, could you just use your zapper so it wouldn't be as difficult or as annoying or something along those lines. He basically is like, why didn't you use the easier method? And Kevin's like, sometimes I just want to try things different. Or I forget what he says. It basically says like, I wanted to, something along the lines of like, I wanted to see if I could do it this way type of thing. Or I don't know. Do you remember what he said?
I don't remember the exact words, but he says something to the effect of like learning his lesson from this episode of like, now that I've got my zapper, I realize my weakness was that I was too reliant on it, on my power pad and zapper. And I need, you know, in order for me to be at my best as Captain N, I need to be able to be skilled and have that as the extra power kind of thing. It was nice.
His last line is, from now on, I'm keeping my options open, which is a very Kevin way of saying, like, I'm going to make sure I can do both. Though I freeze framed it at 21 minutes and 2 seconds. And like, I understand hands are very hard to animate, but his and Link's hands are just wild. Like Link's hand is the size of his face. And like, yeah, just
the thumbs ups.
And then Kevin's thumb is like a quarter of the size it should be. It doesn't make any sense.
Yes, if his hand is the size of his head and then his thumb is the size of his eye. Like,
yep. I love it. So that's Once Upon a Time Machine. Dexter, I think you had a lot stronger opinions on this than I did. I thought it was actually, I told you a bit off mic, this episode or the next one we're recording, I think are the best ones I've seen from this season, next to Tetris, which was episode 4, if I remember correctly, the trouble with Tetris. But I actually kind of enjoyed this one. It was one of the ones where I also said off mic, it was hard for me to pay attention, but that's because it's been a cacophony of craziness in my household over the last couple of weeks. So prepping for these episodes has been interesting, to say the least. But I enjoyed this one, actually. Like, I don't necessarily like the Link and Captain N dynamic. I never thought they were that much fun together, but I do think the actual overall like structure and layout of this episode it's fun. It's decent. What are your thoughts, though?
Yeah, I still realizing before even the first commercial break, I think this was the best episode so far. I might even argue out of every episode, including season one, it's definitely the best episode of season two. I think hands down, for me, it might be top episode so far of this entire endeavor we've been on. But I'm a sucker for time travel, which this has that. The only downside is, I mean, the time travel works the exact same as using warps, which they've been doing this entire series. So the time travel just seems a little convoluted, if I could say that. But the animation is really good for the show on this episode. I'm also a Legend of Zelda stan, so anytime we can squeeze those characters in here, I love it. I actually liked that they kind of picked up where they left off with Link and Kevin's rivalry in the picnic scene.
Because, yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that. That is a pretty decent continuity thing they had going on there.
Yeah, because before it was the other way around, where Link felt like he was the one being like, am I good enough? You know, because Kevin was doing so great. And this was kind of the other side of the coin of that, and where Kevin was starting to feel, you know, not worthy.
Second fiddle to Link.
Yes, because Link slices a rock. He does this really cool move, and he jumps. And he jump kicks a boon, and all that stuff. And
a sentence I never thought I would ever hear anyone utter. He drop kicks a boon.
And when Kevin tries to do something flashy, he ends up like tripping over the picnic basket and all that stuff. Yep. So, you know, and they kind of razz each other back and forth, with like a little bit of friendly rivalry, but yeah, I mean, and I, of course, like I said, I loved the Puss in Boots game as a kid on NES. I definitely, you know, I don't know how much it is. I don't really keep track of the collector's market, but I don't think it's usually, I would consider it a hidden gem in my opinion, just because of like, it's a solid game. It's good as far as it's got platforming, it's got shooter levels. Yeah, it's got some great music. If I remember correctly, I'd have to go back and listen to it again. But as a kid, I thought that Led Zeppelin's, one of their songs, stole from the last level, like the last boss level. Like, I thought that that was like, oh, that's the Puss in Boots song.
That's Kashmir is the song.
Kashmir, yes. I thought that Kashmir was taken from Puss in Boots, but if I had to guess, I'm sure it's the other way around, you know.
Well,
but
considering this game came out in like 1990, and I'm fairly certain that song came out in the 70s, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know games from that time where it was common for them to just wholesale, like, take songs, because, like, the Rickroll song, Never Gonna Give You Up, is just the theme for Robo in Chrono Trigger, like, stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, and there's stuff in like Earthbound, which is just wholesale ripped off from the Beatles. It's just sampled directly from the Beatles. Real quick, what I was going to say is the Puss in Boots, Para's Great Adventure game for the original Nintendo, $20 loose, $60 complete. So not awful, not like an outrageous price. If you want a sealed, brand new version of it, only people who listen to the CU podcast will get that. That sells for $241. So, yeah. So you're looking between $20 and $60 for it.
If you're looking for the authentic experience, not with an emulator, I'd say just go ahead and emulate it. But if you're, I mean, $20, that sounds like a pretty good, you know, for what I remember from the game, that's not a bad price to.
And plus, if you're a collector, it's probably worth at least checking out. But yeah, no, I enjoyed this one a decent amount, even though I mean, you probably saw it while recording, Dexter. I like closed my eyes a whole lot while recording. That wasn't you or the episode. I am just so fucking tired right now. Gosh, I can't wait for a nap this afternoon. But we are going to wrap up this episode of Still Loading of Captain N, the Game Master. So, this was a fun one. Dexter, thank you for joining me as always. Where can the good people find you online?
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's just my name, Dexter Morrill, DexterMorrill. There might be a underscore or something in there, but I'm sure you'll find me if you look me up. But yeah, I'm usually talking about or sharing artwork, video game related stuff, video game history stuff. So you can always hit me up on there.
All right, and as usual for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do it in a number of ways. You can give it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Rating or review, excuse me, I just blurred my whole sentence, slurred it. Rating or review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, because that pleases the algorithm gods and it helps people find the show. And it would mean a lot to me, and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy seeing that. So if you want some extra content and you're not willing to throw a couple extra bones my way, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. For $1 a month, you'll get all the episodes a few days early at a higher bitrate, as well as I just started it this year. And I actually have to send a reminder out to everybody. I'm going to start doing polls. I already started one. I picked 4 games that I've never played before or have not gotten far into and I want to play. And I will eventually do an episode on it. So you can participate in polls that help kind of shape the direction of the show. So that's for $1 a month. For $4 a month, you'll get everything at that $1 tier. Plus, you'll also get bonus episodes. And at the time of this recording, and actually when this comes out, come to think of it, I've just started a new series on the bonus episodes where for Christmas, my wife got me a My Arcade Gamer 5 portable little handheld console. And it's one of those magical systems where there's 220 games in one handheld system. So you know when there's that many, they're all quality.
Absolutely.
All grade A certified beef. No, great games. And so if you want to hear me torture myself for one episode, that series happens once a month. There's still 2 bonus episodes in a month, but that only happens once as one of those 2 bonus episodes. So If you've been dying, you can't wait to learn about such classics as Curly Monkey and Curly Monkey 2. There's also such great hits as Amusement Park 2. I still don't see Amusement Park 1 listed on there, but there's an Amusement Park 2. There's also Frontal Fire, Fateful Battle. Oh, and there's four different games based off of swimming stroke, swimming, different swim. Oh my gosh. There are four different games based off of different types of swimming, like the freestyle stroke. That's one game. Backstroke. That's another game. I'm covering them eight at a time, so it's going to be a wild ride, to say the least. And the last game, I'll list three games here just to entice you a little bit more. If you want to listen to me torture myself playing through these, we have Heroes Mice 1 and 2. There's two Heroes Mice games. Oh,
man. You got Heroes Mice 2. Like how,
there's a Heroes Mice 1 and a Heroes Mice 2. And then the last one I'll list here, Homing Chicken. Who doesn't want to learn about that? Homing Chicken. So, yes, I kind of went off on a tangent just because I find the names of these games so amusing. For $4 a month, you'll get two bonus episodes a month, everything at the $1 tier. And this new series for one of those bonus episodes is just me torturing myself through these 220 outstanding games. And then finally, for $5 a month, you'll get everything in the previous two tiers, everything in the $1 tier, everything in the $4 tier, as well as access to Still Bonding, which is my monthly podcast of where me and my friend Erica from the Monster Madness podcast bond over 007. We watch every single James Bond movies, every single James Bond movie. And at the time this episode is dropping, actually on Patreon, the next episode won't be up, but by the time this episode drops on the free feed, there will be a new Still Bonding out, and that will be on You Only Live Twice. So it should be it's a great time. And those episodes, there's a lot of content for you at the $5 level. Those episodes are 2.5 to 3 hours long a piece, and there's now five of them. So that's almost 15 hours worth of content for you just for a measly $5. So that's all I got for you. And of course, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. That's all the time I have for you today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for checking out and continuing to listen to our Captain N series. Dexter, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely.
And we will think of you the next time we play video games.
Yeah.
See you later, everybody.
Bye.